There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. And thank you on the text line. Even some of y'all including memes, that's fine as well, that have downloaded the FM Talk 106.5 app and y'all are loving it. Let me say this. Big thank you to Dalton Orwig. You know, Dalton did a ton on this. Leanna did a ton on this. We've been working on this for quite a while, trying to make sure it was right and what we wanted. But the good thing is, we're a local company, right? We're local folks. We live right here. The company's here. The hosts are here. The management's here. It's all here. So as you look at this app, there's things that you like, things that you want to change, things that your opinions are important to me. Everything we do at this station, your opinions are important to me if we're doing our job or we can do our job better. I'm real proud of the app, but I'm not so proud of the app that if you, you know, you go, hey, have you thought about adding a this and that? Hey, man, drop me a line. Always send an email to Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. But I want you all to check it out. Give it a couple weeks here, and you can stream right there through the app. Of course, all the podcasts available, our latest post on social media, they're all in one place. Weather, anytime, boom, press the button, wherever you are, there's your forecast. We got traffic for you. You can hit that before you get out and go risk your life driving on the roadways of Mobile and Baldwin County. You can see where the traffic issues are. You want to text the station? Boom, one button. You want to call the station? Boom, one button. You want to leave us a voicemail? One button. You can record it right there and send it to it. So check it out. If you are a Apple user, go to iTunes and check it out there. Or if you're like me and you're an Android person, Google Play Store, both places search our full name, FM Talk 1065. So FMTALK, number one, number zero, number six, number five. No dot between them, between six and five. Don't put a period. Just FM Talk 1065. And that top app that has our logo on there, that's it. Hit it, download it, make it part of your smartphone, and enjoy. So we're real excited about this, and I'm glad to be able to roll this out. And I don't know, I got a friend of mine in the studio who's a tech guy himself. Are you going to be one of these people saying, oh, it's about time? Or are you going to celebrate this, or what do you think?
Well, Sean, I guess I could. I would self-describe myself as a non-technical person.
Okay.
So I can't do anything when it comes to coding ones and zeros. So just the fact that you guys were able to do this, I think, is a shining beacon in the continued growth and evolution of FM Talk 106.5. Congratulations, man.
Thank you, man. I'm excited. It's like, I'm like, hey, everybody, look at our new child. You know?
Indeed.
here it is. All right. Lots to do and talk about today, but we also want to talk about the return of Kennedy for Alabama tonight at 6.
Yes. Season 4 of Kennedy for Alabama will launch tonight, 6 o'clock p.m. Really, really excited. We're going to have Governor Don Siegelman as our guest coming right out the gate. And then we will have Mr. Ben Harris, who's the chair of the Mobile County Democratic Executive Committee, on as well. And this season, we are actually going to expand markets as well. So we're doing the live show here at FM Talk 106.5 on Thursday nights. And on Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m., we will be on in the Huntsville market. I believe that's WVNN and News Talk 92.5 mm-hmm. is the station up there that we will be associated with. So it's good to have the opportunity to grow and to bring our voice to different parts of the state. So we're excited.
We all both have big announcements here. That's awesome, too, that you got some statewide coverage.
Yes.
With the show. And if y'all have not heard before, so you need to tune in tonight at 6. If you want an idea of what you're going to get a taste of, well, then Robert and I will discuss issues right now and probably give you an idea. So Robert comes at this. As a Democrat, I come at this as a conservative guy, and we talk about issues. Tonight, you'll be getting it from the Democrat perspective, and a lot of people will be tuned in to hear former Governor Siegelman talk, I'm sure, as
It'll
well.
Be an excellent opportunity to tell you that you are wrong.
All right. Well, let's do that. So you texted me this morning. I was kind of the school leadership issue here.
Wow, man. That was quite an interesting conversation.
We're talking to Rob Holbert.
With Rob Holbert from Lanyap. You know,
if y'all didn't catch it this morning, what Robert and I are talking about is these aren't the football coaches. These are like the chancellors and the muckety-mucks up there and the kind of money they're making.
The administrators. You know, one of the things that we tend to go into our corners and debate is this issue of post-secondary education, whether or not that should be free, whether or not some student debt should be forgiven, et cetera. And we typically go to our corners and have the left-right
fight. You and I disagree.
Fight, yeah. Right? Actually, you and I actually agree on this one. Okay. But this is an area where I tend to disagree with the party stance. But what I've often said when facilitating these conversations is that we are literally asking the wrong question.
Okay.
So I don't think we should necessarily be talking about whether or not to forgive, you know, $10,000 worth of student debt, $50,000, et cetera, et cetera. What we should be asking ourselves is, why is the cost of post-secondary education increasing at a rate that's greater than every other thing that we have in society? And so when you start talking about the what was it, a guy who was making $650K a year?
Yeah. $4 million bailout.
And then the next guy's making like $1 million a year, right? All of that ultimately ends up going down to a student who's paying some sort of tuition. That's before we get into the stuff about the coaches and the foundations and the boosters, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And so that's really where I think the conversation should go. And quite frankly, if the government wasn't guaranteeing loans at the amount of money that they are currently guaranteed, I think you would see the cost of post-secondary education drop like a rock.
Absolutely.
Now, having said all that, I do think there is some government oversight that should go to the way that interest is charged and the way that interest compounds over time, right? But when it comes to paying the principal that people ended up accruing, that's actually something I think is an individual's responsibility and they should actually pay it.
You know, I've talked about this before on that and, how we arrive at the tuition dollars. Now, you went to Naval Academy. I went to state school. I graduated from University of Alabama. And what I was paying for school per semester compared to what my nephews, who that was the next time I really got to look at it, and they're in their 20s, late 20s, what they were paying for it, night and day, it was almost 100-something% increase. And I asked the question, do they have an opportunity to make twice as much money doing the same job as you would? And they don't. You know what I'm saying? The salary is not commensurate with what the is there that much new information or that much new potential for making more money out there? And I don't see it. And so something has to be done here to make it. I'm not saying we're going to turn it back to what it was in 1985, but how about we look at how did they do it in 1990?
So I have a really good friend of mine from undergrad who is a PhD in French women's history. And she's actually
specified.
Very, very specified. But she's an academic in the St. Louis area.
Okay.
And so she was down with her family along the Gulf Coast here for vacation. And we were, ping-ponging back and forth on Facebook. And she was talking about the amount of grief that they, as the tenured professors, were getting from, called the Board of Trustees, et cetera, et cetera. When you analyze the cost of education and you look at what a tenure professor is making and how many hours they're spending in the classroom versus doing research, et cetera, that cost is relatively flat.
Yeah.
The increase in school expenses over years are things that are happening outside of the classroom. And so that's why I'm saying before we really start to unpeel the onion and talk about forgiving student debt, we got to go back, figure out where those costs are, and try to root those costs out of the system.
Yeah, and well said. And one thing, you mentioned not to mention the coaches, but that's how Rob opened up his story, talking about the coaches. But there's a measurable and a pretty tough ROI on coaches. Let's just say in the SEC, you better win. You better win, or you could be looking for a new job. Now they have built themselves bailouts as well, but in that case, there's a very measurable item of why they get the job and why they stay or leave.
Sure.
And so, I don't know that for a chancellor. I don't know what that...
See, I'm a little more critical when it comes to the sports versus the non-sports. And it's only from the standpoint that I think that more people should be able to benefit from the entertainment dollars that are going into that particular area. So anytime you start talking about coaches and how they're paid, I want to go back to players and mm-hmm. what it is they're able to earn based upon their labor that they're actually doing on the field. But that notwithstanding, you're right, at least at an absolute minimum, you can measure, based upon win or losses, what their performance is in a way that's different than an administrator. So who is this cat? It was, I think he was referring to Steve Flowers, for example, well, who was on a job that didn't have an email address or something like that. Yeah. It's like, how would anybody look at that, just as a parent who's writing a check right now to send their kid to school, and think something like that is okay? Right. Yeah. There's definitely a problem there that we need to focus on.
And I think if we – and you said something at the beginning of this discussion that's very important too, is this – the government backing of these loans, mm-hmm. it distorts the market.
Sure.
It distorts the market because they know there's this guarantor there. That's and they can say, okay, we're going to raise tuition to this. Mm-hmm. And the government says, okay.
Right.
Where, you know, other people are like, no, that's – no, we're not going to do that. I mean, mm-hmm. it's going to take one person, one group to say no.
Yep, absolutely. And so you actually referenced the fact that I went to United States Naval Academy for undergrad. And so, you know, as a kid coming out of Pritchard, Alabama, we didn't have any money saved up as a family. And so for us, that was very good to be able to get my education that way. But I often refer to that and say what I provided was service in exchange for education.
Mm-hmm.
I did that there. I actually got a master's degree through the Naval Postgraduate School. And after Naval Postgraduate School, I had to do more years. So that's why I ended up serving 9 years on active duty as opposed to five, which is the typical requirement. But it's this exchange, right? So mm-hmm. you're doing something. So even when you're talking about trade schools or community colleges, no problems whatsoever funding any of that stuff if there is an exchange. And it can be any type of public service. It doesn't necessarily have to be the military.
Right. And this is, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where we, if this is tackled from a federal level or we tackle this from a state, you know, mm-hmm. trust of the schools. I mean, private institutions, one thing. Let's talk about our state schools.
Sure.
This is where I think we make the difference. And how? What is the message to those schools?
You know, it's interesting because I was thinking of it similar to this issue of name and likeness.
Yep.
So either the states can lead or the states can follow. But ultimately, what ended up putting pressure on the NCAA was when the big states, mostly associated with the Power Five, mm-hmm. started to say, you know what, maybe we're going to look at this differently. And if we, from a state perspective, started to put pressure on the feds, then perhaps the feds would look at it differently as well.
All right. This is a good discussion and one we'll continue having, especially as families are cutting checks.
Indeed.
Get kids Indeed. In school. All right, let's talk about a couple other items here.
Sure.
The Vice President Harris goes to Guatemala.
You weren't going to let me off the hook on that one, were you?
No, she would. Of course, she didn't go to Europe either, right? Her conversation the other night with Lester Holt, and he's like, mm-hmm. but you didn't. He said, we. He said, you didn't go to board. She said, mm-hmm. I didn't go to Europe either. I'm still scratching my head on that one, but. How that?
So one of the things I like about our conversation is as much enthusiasm as we have on some of the topics that we discuss, there are these times when you and I have a tendency to align. So if I was to do a meme of my reaction to that particular interview, it would be the proverbial facepalm, right? So let's talk about the political optics and let's talk about the reality.
Okay.
On the political optics side, that was beyond unacceptable, right?
Yeah.
Because when you talk about the individuals who are operating at that touch point, so physically located on the border, you get a different perspective from going and talking to those individuals directly than what you would get if it's going through a bunch of translators.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that anyone operating at that level tends to operate in a bubble, so you should be doing things to get out of that bubble. Now, having said that, Vice President Harris was a senator from California. I am sure that at some point she has been to the border.
Maybe.
And
I don't know.
She's been to the border. You already know. She's been to the border at some point. The point that I'm making is that would be a better answer would be to say, I was a senator from California, and I've been to the border X number of times. You know what I mean? She should still go. But the point is that's a whole heck of a lot better, more rational answer than saying, well, I haven't been to Europe either. You know what I mean? It's like I haven't been to North Dakota yet, right? So, but that was the part about that I thought was disappointing. Now, having said that, she did go to Guatemala, And we know that the root cause of the problem exists somewhere in Central America.
That's where global warming is? In Central America? Because that's one of the items that was laid out as the reason for...
That's a tennis ball, Sean. I'm not even going to chase it. The point is that we need to do things at our border, right? We need to have border security. And we need to look at the root causes that are causing people to leave their source. So if you want
to criticize... Do we have border security right now?
Hold on a second. If you want to criticize Senator Harris for not focusing on the border locally, then you also have to criticize the prior administration for not engaging there as well. And so I think it's actually
the prior administration was doing, I mean, look at the numbers from when former President Trump was in office to now.
No,
border crossing, yes.
That's another tennis ball.
It's not a tennis ball, it's a fact.
So when we talk about what we do internationally, right, we use the military, for example. So we're all around the world, right? So in the 96-97, when I was on the USNS Pecos operating in the Arabian Gulf, it's presence. We're there. We're engaging. So when something happens, you have resources that they're actually there and able to respond, sometimes militarily, sometimes from a humanitarian perspective. If we're going to solve this problem, we have to be engaging the Central American countries and, to the point that you were trying to make earlier, we have to improve border security.
Yeah
we have to do that, right?
And I'm not against engaging the root cause, but until you stop the flow...
But a lot of my friends on the right were criticizing her for the Central American part.
What they should have been doing is
complimenting her on the Central American part while simultaneously holding her accountable for not going to our local border, which, of course, you and I have already acknowledged he should have done.
All right. Coming right back, and we'll try to wrap this up and talk about more of tonight's show with Robert.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right. Welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Robert Kennedy Jr., my guest. Kennedy for Alabama back on tonight at 6. We'll talk about that in just a second. I wonder, this text from Michael, and there are a ton of them here, but this one said, the problem isn't us fixing their country. It's turning off the light of America that's attracting the mosquitoes. Don't let illegals suck our blood. He's staying with a metaphor here, I guess, and they won't flock here. Then maybe they will actually fix their own problems. You know, one of the things just to, in there, there's something what Michael said there in looking at this. The fact that the people, this is why I took much umbrage with the global warming commentary, because I said, my name is Sean Salvador. It's not Sean Sullivan. Okay. And I'm there and I got two kids, a wife. Okay. If I'm going to risk everything, my heart goes out to these people.
Absolutely.
If I'm going to risk everything.
Absolutely.
I'm not talking about the coyotes and the drug dealers and those.
Yep.
I'm talking about the families, the regular folks. They're going to risk everything. I'm doing that because I can't get ahead. I can hustle as hard as I can in this country. And if I don't pay patronage to this person or kiss this person's butt or whatever, I can't make it.
Sure.
United States represents a place where your toil and effort, you can make
it. It's the idea.
And those people have been leaving for a long time from those countries.
Sure.
Which leaves people that don't have that heart in those countries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way. So what Michael's saying, in a way, I'm agreeing that if you, another great benefit of securing our border is those people stay home and they finally get sick of this person. And there's mm-hmm. enough of those good people that want to work, that say, we're not doing this anymore. We're not doing this.
So maybe not, right? Because at the end of the day, you actually touched on it. It's like, how bad would your life have to be for you just to start walking?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, we were driving across the bay today and annoyed with the traffic that was on the Bay Bridge. Do you know what I mean? And just imagine somebody saying, I'm going to walk from, you know, Guatemala to the U.S. border.
Yeah.
So clearly their life has to be bad. There is the vast majority of the folks who are moving are just trying to get a better life, right? You can't possibly have an open border and take everybody in who wants to come in, right? That's just not practical. Right. But the notion or the idea that the folks who are trying to do that, coyotes and drug dealers notwithstanding, that all those people are bad. It was even in the language that your texter chose to use, is it ends up being like demonistic language.
Yeah.
Right? Like
and I realized that when I read
it. So one of the things that's always kind of disappointed me in our discourse is, if we have a conversation and we're having a conversation about border security and it involves physical barriers and drones and surveillance mm-hmm. and all the stuff that we know would actually end up working, you don't necessarily have to say, quote, Mexicans are rapists, end quote, or make everybody try to think it's MS-13 that's coming over here.
But there are some MS. I mean,
there are. But the point being is that when you couch it in that language, it takes a conversation that should be rational and all of a sudden makes it irrational.
Well, what about making the – and we're about to run out of time, but just sure. I think – closing the border, securing the border is the most heartfelt thing you can do for those people, not to risk everything, to not have the option, to know they can't get through that way and they can affect change in their own country and they don't risk everything coming.
Yeah, it's the affecting things in their own country without external help that I think is inherently problematic. Well, because we could apply that to any one of the number of issues that we have here that still haven't been solved over time.
All right, well, we'll pick this up on a future show once again tonight.
Kennedy for Alabama, live at 6 o'clock p.m. So listen and call in with your comments and your text.
All right, be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, Thursday style. Glad to have you here. And I appreciate the messages here on the app. People downloading the app. Brand new FM Talk 106.5 app. Take us with you wherever and get the features. I mean, you can, like all the stuff we've been doing, that's all in one place, plus a bunch of new features. So like streaming and texting, like you stream the station, you want to text in the text line, it's one button. But now we have a feature where you can leave a voicemail for the station or hit a button and call the station. Also, check out the schedules, the podcasts, our social media posts, all that good stuff in one place on the FM Talk 106.5 app. So if you're iTunes, okay, go to iTunes if you're an Apple user. Go to Google Play if you are an Android user and look for FM Talk 106.5. And no point between the 6 and 5. So just FMTALK, number 1, number 0, number 6, number 5. Bingo. App pops up, download that baby, and enjoy it. So it's exciting. Something brand new here at FM Talk 106.5. We love to bring you new things, and it's one of those. All right, go to the phones, and then we can get some texts. Chris is in Orange Beach. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Sean. That's what I need, another app. That's a great idea.
Thank you, man.
There was a comment made a minute ago by Robert about the previous administration not engaging in Central America.
Yeah.
That's simply not true.
Yeah.
My brother was the ambassador to the El Salvador.
Oh, wow.
Under the prior administration.
Cool.
And President Bukele's success against MS-13 and his ability to lower the crime rate by nearly 40% is directly related to the assistance and aid given by the prior administration. And to hear someone now say that they didn't engage in Central America is absolutely wrong. She was slated, Camelia was slated to go to El Salvador, but changed and went to Guatemala because the El Salvadoran president didn't want her to come. The current ambassador has threatened to withdraw aid if he keeps publicly supporting Trump. So to say that Trump didn't engage and that they are engaging when they're actively threatening to take his aid away because he still publicly supports Trump just kind of angers me.
It's a very interesting story here. I have to dig into that, or you can email me some information on that. I'd like to dig in and find out more about that. That one needs some exposure, some sunshine on that.
Yeah, well, I could get my brother-in-law to call in tomorrow night and burn Robert down.
Now he'll be on tonight at 6. Yeah, so get him tonight.
Either way.
Okay. Well, yeah. And
I couldn't sit by and let that continue. Just to say that the prior administration didn't engage. He had the most success with border security than any administration in the last 10, and it was because he did engage.
Very good, Chris. I appreciate it. And if you can get me info on that that story about what's going on with the threats, I'd be very interested. Thanks for the call. Leaves the line open at 343-0106. I mean, one of the things, I've said this several times, one of the things, securing the border is a humanitarian effort in its own. Because as there are open borders continuing, people risk everything. Now, there are a lot of bad guys doing the crossing the border. But there's also, I mean, look, there's also people are desperate. Families are desperate. And they see the United States. I mean, you would too. You would too. If you were in a situation in a Central American country and you thought, okay, they're not enforcing border and I can get in there and I have a chance to make some real money and do something, and you would go for it. It is the responsibility not only of securing the border, it's also the responsibility of companies not hiring illegals. Right? I mean, cut off the demand. Quit doing it. Quit having and then people would stay home. And maybe, I don't know, Robert thinks it's pie in the sky. I don't. I think if you have enough of the people that have that hustle and have that desire that are coming north and risking everything, they're leaving their countries with a deficit of that kind of spirit. If those people stay home eventually, now I understand. I mean, there's entrenched corruption and things you think you can't, but enough people that want to do it correctly are left, then they can get with other people and other people and other people and start to stand up for what's right in their own places. But now, you're not going to do that. You're going to go north and get that done. So a humanitarian move is securing the border, not having a policy where, well, you know, we're going to say this when we're talking, but everybody knows that, you know, you get here and you get across the border and you have a child with you, and if we know if that child's yours or not, whatever, then we're going to do this, that, and the other. I mean, we are incentivizing people taking that big risk. All right, some comments here on tuition. David said, you want a perfect example of cost of college increasing outside the classroom? University of South Alabama increased student fees when they started the football program so they could fund the football program. By how much? Does anybody have a number on that? That's interesting. But, like the comparison, Rob Holbert's article in Lanyap, talking about Coach Saban, for example, the ROI, believe me, when I first saw the first contract way back, 14 years ago for Coach Saban, I went, oh my gosh. And then you realize, you go, yeah, you know what? It's probably a pretty good deal. You know, what's the ROI on that? You can invest in capital, which he is, right, to the university system in a way. He's a capital investment, and he brings in way more money than he costs him, let alone the overall benefit. I mean, that's just the direct benefit to the university system. And that may come from new people enrolling in school there from out of state, which is a big story, actually, you look at, that's driven by that. But merchandising, attendance, and then all the other, and rights fees, obviously, but all the other people and businesses that get to exist and make a living because people are coming to see a team in Tuscaloosa that happens to have a coach, Nick Saban. So Phil says about illegal immigrants, they send all their money back home and don't pay actual taxes and send more money to family members to actually afford for them to migrate north illegally across our border. So Phil's saying it's self-fulfilling. There are more folks, yeah. Well, you know, if you had somebody in that situation that, like, our job is to enforce the rule of law. The person who doesn't have the option south of our border, I want to stop them. I want to turn them around, but I do understand their motivation. And Phil, if you had, like, say, Phil, you and I are cousins or whatever, and I get in and I'm sending money back. You're seeing the cash dollars I'm sending back to, you know, Mexico or Guatemala or Nicaragua or Honduras or Costa Rica, wherever. You're seeing the dollars I'm sending back. You're like, dang it, Sean, what you got it going on? I'd be like, come on, you want to come up and do this? You can make it as well, and I will incentivize you, sure. Unnamed texter says, no one's discussing it now that illegal immigration of people not from Latin America through the southern border has increased by 85% in the past 5 months, meaning from Asia, Europe, etc. They're all saying to heck with it and coming through our southern border. So, not everybody is coming from Central America, for sure. I don't know all the different. You know, here's the problem, too. You only know what you capture, right? And then you have to assume and model, you know, how they do that. They're like, okay, if we captured this number of people, then we have to do like a modeling that this person represents X number of other people or something like that, that got across without getting caught. But remember part of this, too. I'm not against us here, but I'm just pointing out, not enforcing the border. Social programs, government programs we taxpayers pay for for illegal immigrants. We are incentivizing that migration. And when businesses hire illegal immigrants in this country, you're incentivizing it. I mean, how many ads did they put out about for people using drugs, right? You use drugs and here's what you're financing. And they show pictures of, back in the day, El Chapo's, you know, where he shot up all these people or all these different stories. You see all the violence. And those ads, I thought, were well put together. I don't know if they got to the right audience, but they're saying, hey, you do drugs, you're financing this. Well, I'll tell you what, you hire illegal immigrants and you're incentivizing this as well. So we have got to close the border, enforce our laws, which, I mean, does that get done in the next 4 years? I hadn't been shown anything that makes me think it will. At the same time, if you want to try to do work, and like we were talking about with Chris, the work that's been done in Central America and places to make the life better so they don't leave, that's important. First thing you do, though, you have to shut the border down. And then I do agree. You want to work with those countries and try to figure out, can we do this, that, or the other within reason to help those countries have a better lifestyle? I'm for it. And if you're in the United States of America, you need to quit providing jobs for people that cross the border illegally. News coming up next. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, top 150, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. And so much to talk about around here, which is a great, great thing. Reminder, too, the Let Freedom Ring summer contest going on right now. Brought to you by our friends at Hammerhead Kayaks, Chavis and Chickasaw, Lola Bell's, Six River Shooting Center, your CBD store, and over $3,000 worth of prizes for you and you and you and you to win. Here's how it works. Remember, you go to our participating sponsors. First thing you do is go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065. Get the details there. Top item up. It'll show you, you know, here's where you go. Drop your name in each day in the registration box. And then each of our participating sponsors are going to draw for a qualifying prize. So five of y'all are going to win a prize from right from the get-go. And then the five of y'all will be in competition for the grand prize, over $3,000 worth of summertime goodies. So check it out on our Facebook page and make sure you're dropping your name in the registration box. All right, a couple stories here as we get ready to wrap it on a Thursday. This one, more of my obsession with the Iranians and their Navy, because I think this is a big story. We talked about it last week. It was a bad Wednesday last week for the Iranians. Now, today, the Associated Press is reporting an Iranian destroyer and support vessel are now sailing in the Atlantic Ocean in a rare mission far from the Islamic Republic. This according to Iranian state TV, which I wonder what their shows are, Dalton. Can we see, like, outside their news stories, what are their daytime dramas on Iranian state TV? What are their reality shows? What must those be like? It's a trip by the new domestically built destroyer Sahand and intelligence gathering vessel Makran comes amid U.S. media reports citing anonymous American officials saying the ships were bound for Venezuela. We've talked about that because Venezuela bought arms from the Iranians, and I guess they're trying to... Amazon didn't do the delivery, so the Iranians wanting to do that. The vessels departed last month from Iran's southern port of Bandar Abbas, said of Admiral Habiballah Sahari, Iran's deputy army chief. He described their mission as the Iranian Navy's longest and most challenging voyage yet, without elaborating. Oh, so cagey. Iranian state TV released a short clip of the destroyer cruising through the Atlantic's rough seas. The video likely was shot from the Makran, a converted commercial oil tanker with a mobile launch platform for helicopters. So it's like a... not an aircraft carrier, but a helicopter toter. Like, I think the aircraft carrier, one thing, this is a helicopter toter. Quote here from the Iranian general said, the Navy is improving its seafaring capacity, improving its long-term durability in unfavorable seas and the Atlantic's unfavorable weather conditions. He said the warships would not call any country's port during the mission. Okay. We'll watch that. I know we are, like, out of bases all over the place. We're watching that. Images from Maxar Technologies, dated April 28th, appear to show seven Iranian fast attack craft typically associated with its paramilitary Revolutionary Guard on the deck of the Makran. Satellite images from Planet Labs, Inc. suggest it left a port at Bandar Abbas sometime around April 29th. Not immediately clear where the Makran and destroyer are now. Oh, come on. We know exactly where they are. Now, on the Venezuela side, it says a website, Politico, first reported in May, citing anonymous officials, that the ship's final destination may be Venezuela. Iran maintains close ties to Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. What else y'all need to know about Venezuela now, right? And has shipped gasoline and other products to the country amid U.S. sanctioned campaign targeting fuel-starved Caracas. Venezuela is believed to have paid Iran under U.S. sanctions for its own shipments. So the top aide to Maduro has denied press reports that the ships will dock there. Yeah. Officials spoke on the condition of anonymity, of course, yeah. During the news conference on May 31st, Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Qasabadze, I'm guessing, but I'll work on that one. Declined to say where the ships were going. Well, thank you, AP. They're going to, I mean, be very surprised if they're not at some point going to Venezuela. I mean, that's, looks like what's happening here. And also, it looks like a challenge of what we will allow out there. So, that's going on. Keep your eyes on that. Also, I don't need to tell y'all because you're normal human beings and you live in the real world like I do. But for the muckety mucks in the ivory towers, they have to look at the numbers here. Prices rose by 5% in May, so inflation. Story from the Washington Post says the largest increase since the Great Recession, continuing a steady climb in inflation, even as policymakers insist on staying the course. Price spikes often coincide with downturns, and officials from the White House and Federal Reserve have predicted that prices will climb over the coming months, especially compared with a year ago when the economy was reeling from the coronavirus pandemic shutdown. However, the move adds new fuel to the Republican criticism that Biden administration is spending too much, which could lead to an overheated economy. Uh-huh. The most recent inflation figures released today by the Bureau of Labor Statistics are not rattling the Biden administration. Ah, they're in Europe. Nor the Fed. Both predict that the prices will continue to rise until supply chains and consumer demand recalibrate and the economy recovers. The Fed, which is charged with keeping prices stable and unemployment low, says it won't rush to raise interest rates and tamp down on inflation until the labor market has time to heal. So there's your inflation update. Maybe we'll make that a special segment. The inflation update. Put that in the mix. And just want to, we'll talk about this story tomorrow. Talked about it some this morning, but I just want to point this out. Here's another, this is Market Watch's story. There's many, many places online with this headline. I think we started the show on it too. It says Interior Department Inspector General concludes that the Lafayette Square was cleared for fencing contractor rather than Trump's photo op at a church. Now, I hate to ruin what the mantra has been for so many people out there that, you know, what was done and why. But now you have this coming out. This is AP story. It says an internal governmental investigation has determined that the decision to forcibly clear racial justice protesters from an area in front of the White House last summer was not influenced by then-President Donald Trump's plan to stage a Bible-toting photo opportunity at that spot. The report released yesterday by the Interior Department's Inspector General, so, mind you, this is not from like a Trump operative or something, concludes that the protesters were cleared by U.S. Park Police on June 1st of last year so the contractor could get started installing new fencing. Once again, the contractor wanted to install new fencing. That's why the people were cleared out. So when the demonstrators were there that were protesting the death of George Floyd, and then people said the president had them cleared out so he could do the photo op. It looks like, according to non-Trump, President Trump operatives, that in fact it was a fence that was being put up, and that's why it was done. So, and what they say, put that in your pipe and smoke it. We'll be back and do this again tomorrow morning. Be pinch hitting for Dan, so I'll be on with Dalton tomorrow at 6. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.